Hi everyone, hope you had a great weekend. I'm Tony Chen and this is Fish and Bits, a business and data podcast on the world of seafood. This week, I'm excited to bring you a deep dive into the topic of sterile fish and specifically triploid salmon. Triploids mean that a fish has three chromosomes instead of being a male, which has XY chromosomes, or a female, XX. Triploids have an extra set of chromosomes that make them sterile, which creates a number of benefits from a sustainability and even commercial angle. Other industries have used the concept of polyploidy, or more than two sets of chromosomes, in plants and animals for decades. Triploid oysters have been produced since the 1980s and are now the most popular product at raw bars. Seedless fruits like bananas, watermelon, and grapes are also all polyploidy. And over these last few months, we've been able to see some of the data behind recent commercial usages of triploid salmon and the potential they have for the future. The Institute of Marine Research in Norway published a report on the use case of triploids in northern Norway and the challenges they endured. In another region of the world, Grieg Seafood just completed their first triploid harvest at their new sites in Newfoundland, Canada, with impressive results. In this episode, I'll cover a brief background on the history of triploids, the wide range of results we're seeing, and how this may impact the industry moving forward. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode, so let's dive in. As I mentioned, polyploidy plants and animals aren't necessarily a new development. They occur naturally, and we've discovered methods to be able to engineer them consistently. Typically, it involves a combination of heat and pressure that can keep cells like eggs from dividing, and when those cells get fertilized, you end up with a triploid cell. And in most scenarios, a sterile organism will put its energy into growth since it will not need to reproduce. That helps to accelerate growth and even the size of the organism in certain cases. Since these polyploid cells have more chromosomes and therefore more DNA in each cell, it can also lead to larger cells. Triploid blueberries, for example, end up twice as large as regular blueberries. And in the case of salmon, in addition to the potential commercial benefits, the fact that an animal can end up sterile can be a huge plus for the industry for when escapes do occur and there is a risk of genetic mixing between wild and farmed fish. Triploids pretty much remove that concern. But while the theoretical science makes sense and the methods have been known for many years on how to produce these animals, why have triploid salmon not become a mainstream part of the industry like it has in other places? Well, a place to start is the reports from Norway's Institute of Marine Research, who has been studying the usage of triploids for numerous commercial-scale generations as part of the Green Licenses Program in Norway that gave developmental farming licenses to companies working on new solutions. For the better part of a decade, a number of sites in northern Norway have been using these licenses to raise triploid salmon, and last winter, the results from their 2020 generation of fish were just published. And to be honest, the results weren't promising. On the Institute's website, the title reads, "Triploid Salmon, Only Downsides." They concluded that triploid salmon resulted in reduced fish welfare, increased risk of disease, and lower quality when compared to diploids. And while the results seemed conclusive, I couldn't help but dive deeper into the data to see what had happened. And here's a summary of their study. It tracked a combination of 16 different fish groups that were deployed in northern Norway at 10 different farming locations. 9 of these groups were triploids, and 7 were diploids, and the total study contained roughly 10 million fish. These fish were then followed until harvest and monitored across a variety of metrics, such as disease, deformities, mortalities, feeding rates, and quality. And the results from the statistical testing done on the results did show that triploids performed, on average, poorer than diploids across a number of the categories. That said, a few points stuck out in my analysis of the results. First, this particular study seemed extremely constrained by disease challenges. 12 of the 16 sites had winter ulcers, 4 contracted the highly contagious ISA virus, and 8 of the sites had heart and skeletal muscle inflammation, or HSMI. Additionally, these generations had varying levels of sea lice treatments. Compared with even typical productions across Norway, these fish were exposed to many more external challenges than I believe the researchers expected. The second point that stood out to me was that the spring versus fall generations of triploids seemed to perform wildly different. Spring triploid fish performed much closer to their diploid counterparts, and the difference was much less than what was seen in the fall generations, suggesting to me that the external factors may play a more significant role in the performance of these triploids than we had previously known. The third point that I found interesting is that while the numbers are certainly high for issues like mortality and superior harvest percentage, looking now at the widely reported data around fish health and production quality that we see coming out of the sites today, these results are really not out of scope with the issues that are plaguing farmers across the entire industry. These issues are ones that the entire industry hasn't figured out yet, and the problem may not just be with triploid fish. Another thing that really baffles me about the results of this report is that they're completely different with the news coming out of Grieg's reported results of their triploid harvest in Newfoundland, Canada, on the country's east coast. Grieg has been working to establish their farming presence in Placentia Bay, and one of the unique requirements of this location is that, in agreement with the province, the planned sites require that they use sterile, all-female salmon as part of this farming license. The company publicly announced that they would use triploids to accomplish this sterilization, and towards the end of 2023, harvested their first generation. The publicly reported numbers are striking, even though they are just at one location. This particular site had a 5% annual mortality rate, 97% superior harvest quality, and zero sea lice treatments. Compared with the data that we're seeing from different parts of the world, these results are almost unheard of right now. And I had the chance to speak with the COO of farming from all of Grieg Canada, Grant Cumming, to hear more about this first generation in Newfoundland. In addition to confirming that the story on the ground does reflect what I saw in the data and that the generation went extremely smoothly, he also made sure to note that his team, and quite frankly all of Grieg, has invested quite heavily into this region, such as using specifically designed feeds designed for triploids. Another one of the reasons he pointed out to the success of this generation was a focus to incorporate as many of the best practices and lessons learned from all over the world when it comes to using triploids. Outside of the studies I've referenced in this episode, there really haven't been too many true commercial-scale generations of triploid salmon, so it's obviously important to learn as much as we can from the data that we do have. And this is extremely important for Grieg in particular. See, in order to grow their Newfoundland operation more in scale, they need to show that it is possible to raise a successful generation. So incentives have been aligned across the entire company to make sure that this would work. Not only did they need to raise fish, but Grant mentioned that this generation also required the company to test all their other logistical challenges needed to harvest, process, and ship the fish. The better they perform, the easier it would be for the province to enable their growth moving forward. And from the data, it looks like this particular generation has gone almost perfectly. Now, it's important to note that there is some luck involved. There are a variety of challenges that can arise in an ocean environment, but at least for this run of fish, those challenges were pretty much all avoided. So what does this mean for the future of triploids? We have results from Norway that concluded that triploids don't work, and we have results in Canada that have shown that it can work. Where is the potential for triploids headed? Well, as I mentioned earlier, the science does seem to make sense. It works in other species, and now there are examples of good and poor commercial results. To me, it suggests that there are potential situations where they can make a lot of sense, but perhaps we don't know enough yet to figure out exactly when and how they thrive the best. The results in Norway come from just one region that was exposed to a ton of different confounding factors, and the case in Canada was at a brand new site where the company was fully incentivized to get it right. I'm not saying that the product's going to be perfect, but to me, the potential of triploids definitely still has some positives. Who knows how carefully developed genetics, aligned incentives, and specialized feeds could help make triploids a commercial reality for the industry, while also ensuring that interbreeding doesn't occur between wild and farm stocks. Grant made sure to also point out that solving interbreeding with wild populations, whether that's through triploids or another technique, can also help to gain social license for the overall industry in a time when everyone knows it could use some more. In the long run, it may be an investment that really pays off for the industry as a whole. But as I've shown, we're definitely not there yet. Maybe in a few years, the industry will look back and say that we should have invested more sooner. Either way, I do know that Grieg's operations in Canada will continue to serve as an extremely interesting case to follow, and you can be sure we'll stay on top of it. And that's all for today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, I'd love for you to send it to a friend or a colleague. It would help us out a ton. As a note, I'll be gone for a couple of weeks in Norway attending Hav Expo, so there won't be an episode next week, but we'll be back shortly after that with the quarter one review of the salmon companies. Hope you have a great week, and we'll talk again soon.